Hi everyone, this is Tim at North and South Podcasts. This is a Hope Street podcast. It's a real honour today to introduce Carrie-Anne Lackey. And Carrie-Anne is a menopause warrior, as she describes herself, and she's a guest speaker with particular expertise on the menopause and the workplace. And I heard Carrie-Anne speak at Hope Street Tuesday night meeting just over a month ago. It's now June 2022, and I couldn't believe what I heard about, A, how underreported and forgotten about the menopause seems to be collectively by society, but also its huge impact on well-being for many people going through menopause and the knock-on effects of that in places like the workplace and relationships, etc. So, Carrie-Anne, thanks for coming on. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you, lovely. The sun is shining still.
Good stuff. Now, you speak very, very well, so I'm going to let you speak as much as you want today, and I'll try and keep quiet on a topic which I haven't had personal experience of, but obviously it's something that I am aware of. I used to do trade union casework, and there was a big thing a few years ago about women getting into the 50s and teaching, and all of a sudden finding themselves under a lot of pressure because of the menopause. And it became clear when I spoke to you, or when I heard you speak, that often a lot of women might not even know it's the menopause, and a lot of workplaces might not know how to respond to that. So first of all, let's just assume a level of ignorance for someone listening. How would you describe what the menopause is?
Right, so we can go really medical here. So menopause is actually 12 months after the date of your last period.
Right.
So that's when you go into a phase called, I suppose, postmenopause. So you, because you've, you once you start that, you're out of the menopause. I think one of the things that you're hearing, seeing on TV is all about the perimenopause, which can start as young as, I don't know, I think 29, and go all the way up to your last period.
Right. And there are different stages of the menopause, aren't there? And the actual word comes from the monthly pause. So it's a pause to the like monthly period cycle. So there are a number of different stages, aren't there? There's the perimenopause, which comes beforehand, and people might not even know that's happening for them. Then there's the menopause, which is 12 months after the last period, as it were. And then you have a postmenopause. Is that the basic structure of it?
It's that simple, yeah.
Cool, good stuff. How long does the menopause last? Is it something that can last for a few years, or its effects, can they go on long term? Or
And I think that's the uncovering. If there was loads of, if I could go on to PubMed today, which is where the medical papers are and where I do a lot of research, each to their own. I think everybody's menopause is very unique to them. So, and it can go on. So I've been perimenopausal since 43 and I'm now 49.
Right.
So 6 years already of bizarre symptoms.
Right. And did you know it was the menopause when these symptoms first started, or have you been on a journey of discovery?
Yeah. So, I mean, to all the, you know, ladies listening out there, it's really odd because I've always been really, really fit. I was a CrossFitter, I was a Muay Thai boxer. I look after myself. Always really kind of, you know, looked after myself. And then one day I just noticed while I was in work that I started to become allergic to everything. I started kind of getting allergies to the air conditioning when I was in work. And then I could see, I used to say that I had like a fat suit on of water, because it couldn't be fat because I didn't eat, you know, I was doing 40 kilo kettlebell swings. And so I went to the doctor and said, look, I feel like I'm wearing a fat suit of water. I don't know what it is. Can you help me? Because it's not fair, because everything around you in society tells you that if you eat well and you exercise and you control your calories, the simple thing, you will be optimum health. I said, and I don't look like how I am. So the doctor actually really heard me, and it was a woman. And she said, you know what, I'm going to refer you to a gynecologist. And I thought, oh, I said, why is it to do with like downstairs and she was like, it could be. So that was really good of her. But then I went to, I waited for a while for an appointment at the women's clinic in Lee. And I was so excited because I thought, I'm finally going to, I felt like somebody needed to pop me with a needle and all this water would come out. And I went in and I sat down, and it's now known as medical gaslighting. I've seen the term on LinkedIn this week by Kate Muir, who did Davina's, produced Davina's show that's been on recently. Basically, it's put up and shut up. So I sat down and she said, well, you're just a woman of a certain age and you're going to have to deal with it.
And this was said to you at a woman's clinic?
Woman in a woman clinic at Lee by a doctor and a specialist in obstetrician and gynaecology.
Wow. I mean, my immediate reaction to that, I've got a rare genetic disease and I felt like I got it gaslighted for years. And it's a common thing with a rare condition like myself. But this is something that 50% of the population are going to experience to varying degrees. You go to a women's clinic and are told that you've just got to get on with it. I find that kind of scary. Now, you're describing physical symptoms. What kind of physical symptoms manifest themselves in the menopause that might be certain things for people to look out for? Now, I know that it's different for everyone and it might be a few things at once, but are there any kind of real telltale signs that keep coming up?
Well, I would say to all the ladies out there, there's 88 symptoms minimum of the menopause. And some of them, I think everybody knows, even including men, is that everybody will say hot flushes, getting moody and brain fog. I think that the three kind of everybody knows about. But one of the things that, from a physical perspective, I suddenly started becoming allergic to everything. I've never been an allergy type person. My eyes started streaming. I would get really hot. I would swell. My whole body would go red. And then I ended up being diagnosed with erythromyalgia. At this point, I still hadn't been diagnosed with perimenopause. And I was like going, you know, I'd get an air freshener in the car and my eyes would stream. I had moments where I was in work and my eyes were just streaming physically. I also think you suddenly feel like it doesn't matter how well you eat, even though that's what society and culture says, you don't lose any weight. I think we laughed about it on the night, but you suddenly get muffin top. And I know you asked what muffin top was, kind of like, I had a waist and all of a sudden I didn't have a waist and I wanted my waist back. And I think that's the kind of human I am is, it's not necessarily okay then what's happening to me, but I want to know why it's happening to me. And then I want you to tell me how I can fix it. So other physical symptoms is, I think a lot of the women that I do see and speak to, it is a swelling, it is not being able to, some people have been like triathletes and I suppose they're physical. If you don't mind me going into the non-physical, I think what's the key ones that I really like to stress today is if you've never had anxiety and you've never had depression and you've got a great life and there's nothing for you to be anxious about, and then suddenly you're getting anxious, you're getting a bit nervous, you're getting a bit, you know, there's a bit of trepidation to do the things that you've always usually done, it's probably perimenopause. Anxiety, depression, and that fear of impending doom and nervousness are suddenly triggered. And that's why it's the highest rate of suicide in women aged 44 to 49.
Well, I mean, that latter statistic, again, you know, that just shows what a big issue this is. Now, again, the hot flushes, the brain fog, the moodiness, like the lethargy, I think is another one, isn't it? They're the kind of classic ones that some people may know about or may not know about, but it's all these kind of ancillary ones that can go with it. And it's basically, I mean, you alluded there to the Davina McCall thing. I've read a lot about this in the papers recently, so it does seem to be getting out there to an extent. People like yourself, fantastic. But it seems very much a case of we need people out there to know and to be educated, and then they can go and say, listen, I've got these symptoms and I think it might be this. And to have that confidence to say that, even if it may may not be that, but to have that confidence to take it to the GPs, because it sounds to me like the medical establishment needs to change a lot as well. Is that your experience with GPs, etc.?
Yeah, I think it takes a lot of courage, and I run a menopause warrior WhatsApp group. So if anybody is listening would like to join that, just reach out to Tim. And in there we have a nurse and a doctor, and it was all the ladies that from a previous work, and you want to see the inconsistencies of them going to the doctor across the country. I tell them to get a toolkit of HRT, because there isn't one medical doctor, no gynecologist, it doesn't matter how special they are, it doesn't matter whether they're the top ranks or whatever, can tell you what you need. They can identify certain things, like not sleeping, then you need some progesterone. Hot flushes are caused by progesterone. So you need usually estrogen, progesterone, Vagifem, which is for downstairs, because what happens downstairs is the collagen on either side of your bladder starts thinning. So collagen generally reduces. And what can happen is you can have a prolapse. So Vagifem is absolutely essential. And then testosterone. Now, people go, testosterone? I'm a girl. But we have four times as much testosterone as we do estrogen as women. And a lot of women lose themselves. That's one of the biggest symptoms. They lose themselves. They don't know who they are. That girl who always went to the gym, or that girl was always out and just didn't even think about it, that's your testosterone. But one of the challenges we're finding when we talk about this toolkit in the group is that somebody could go over to Manchester and sit down with a doctor, and they'd be very caring and say, let's start on estrogen. So I think that it's almost when something's trendy, let's try some estrogen, because medically it's not your estrogen. Remember I said it's not dropping, it's doing an up and down, up and down, up and down zigzag like a heartbeat, where your progesterone actually is slowly dropping, your testosterone slowly dropping. But a lot of women aren't getting all of that. But it's like having underactive thyroid and only be given partial dosage, because doctors themselves are not trained in menopause and the NHS doesn't fund them.
I mean, that's just kind of shocking, isn't it? So these blood tests, you know, how often do people go to GPs and say, oh, I'll give you a blood test? As you've just said, because it's going up and down so much, some of the hormones, etc. A blood test is next to useless, isn't it?
Yeah. So there's nice guidelines that doctors have. There's also the British Menopause Society's advice on how to give doses for testosterone. And I've got to be honest, Tim, a lot of women get completely ignored. So what the challenge is at the moment, and that's why it's into Parliament in a big way, is that testosterone and even some of progesterone, the clinical commissioning group that runs all the prescribing across the country, don't have testosterone down in down for women. If you Google testosterone, all it talks about is men and their sexual health. It doesn't talk about women at all. So we're a forgotten race when it comes to a forgotten creed, really, to be honest, when it comes to the actual essential thing that it gives you your va-va-voom back. And a lot of the women who've had testosterone, who've tried it, they said, what I didn't understand is how much I didn't feel like myself until I started taking it and realised, wow, I've got me back. But the this is beyond belief.
So it sounds like quite a journey, though, to get to the correct point, doesn't it? So basically what you're saying is you can go to doctors with some classical and some maybe non-classical or less well-known symptoms of the menopause. A blood test doesn't really help. And so you go there, and then you might need particular levels of hormones. You've identified four things there, including the... Is that also a hormone for down below, or is that a cream to relieve symptoms?
More about the fact that because your estrogen is dropping, the collagen in your skin, so I think it's because you can't see it, people, it kind of gets ignored, but it's everywhere. So that stops you, because women suddenly start going to the toilet a lot. And it's not because your brain is triggering that, it's because that collagen is thinning in your bladder.
So if you go to the doctor then, and the doctor says, this could be menopausal, if you get to that point, given what the NICE guidelines say, what would you advise people to do at that point? Because what we're saying is that a lot of the guidelines and a lot of the medical establishments aren't really, you know, well-versed with all of this stuff. So what would people need to do at that point?
What I would suggest, and when we're in my previous work, we had Dr. Louise Newson clinic come. So we had Dr. Zoe Hodson. She was actually on the Divina. And it was because a perimenopause is so unique to you, like every pregnancy, you better get in the toolkit. So the toolkit is estradiol, which is estrogen. It's eutrogestrin, which is progesterone. It's Vagifem, which is the pessaries for downstairs, that should be taken anyway, constantly. And then there's testosterone. Now, although we look at the medical establishment to provide us with that, this is how many doses you should have, my obstetrician and gynecologist, who was in private practice, actually, he said, nobody can tell you, Carrie Anne, you have to basically go away and be your own medical trial. So what I say is, key symptoms, like not being able to sleep, you need to take your progesterone. But being able to get that toolkit is really difficult, especially with HRT shortages. But that is the toolkit. And then it's all about, right, let me trial it. And it, just speak to the ladies now that it can take up to 12 weeks. Some people take it for about 3 weeks and go, it's not really doing anything. One of the things I would say about the estradiol is, if you do manage to get it, is remember that it's an up and down, up and down. So unlike the others, progesterone and testosterone, you could be taking it and then suddenly wake up and feel like it's horrible and you don't feel very well. That's because maybe you're on a spike of estrogen and your body doesn't need it for that little while. So it's getting yourself educated, understanding your body. That's the key. Who am I? What can I do? And what I did as well is, in perimenopause, it's a lot about histamine in the blood. I would recommend anybody to go and have a look at Dr. Tina Pierce. She was recommended to her by Newson Health. She is in the early stages of understanding histamine intolerance. So she kind of recommended that that's what I had. So when my body suddenly got erythromyalgia, I would get in the shower, I'd come out and all my legs would be on fire. The perimenopause had triggered that erythromyalgia because of the histamine that had built up.
There's clearly lots of, it's like heading, isn't it? I mean, you take something, it takes a while to kick in. Then you might just be having a bad day. Then you might have something else going on. And then this might be up, that might be down. So how do you get hold of these HRT toolkits? Can they be given to you through the GPs, or is there other ways of accessing them?
Your GP should be able to prescribe them. I think a lot of GPs aren't confident and comfortable in prescribing testosterone yet. We know some of the ladies in my group, the GP has prescribed testosterone.
Yes.
Now, but what you think, can I trial it for? I'd like to take all of them. I'd like to trial them for 3 months to see what's working for me. The word trial helps a doctor because they're not committing.
That's good, because you've got to manage the doctors as well as yourself, haven't you? Now, the media coverage does seem to be improving because of things I've seen and things I've heard, and then people like yourself who are doing a great job. But do the GPs need more training on this issue? And how is that done? Do NICE guidelines need to change? Is that kind of process currently happening? What do you think needs to happen there?
Before it became even trendy, I was lobbying the universities such as Liverpool, Edinburgh and Oxbridge that do medicine to say, how are you going to put menopause on the curriculum? What investment are you going to put into the research? Because I think what I'm finding with a lot of GPs, because they're a specialist, they're not a specialist in everything, is that we just talk about estrogen all the time. So we need that training while the doctors, we need medical research to happen. And then GPs need to be A, paid for menopause, and B, trained. Now, there's lots of places now, like the Menopause Charity, Newson Health, they do free GP training, but it's optional.
I mean, that's one of the problems, isn't it? Because I know that GP surgeries are underfunded and a lot of people are leaving general practice because of the pull from pillar to post. There's been a lot of cuts in recent years, and it's almost like you're saying, oh, and by the way, you need to do this as well. But this is such a huge issue and so widespread that it's clearly justified. Now, we know about, like, when they do practice, they practice car accidents, they practice on male type dummies. And we know that in a lot of health research, they use it on male subjects and then base everyone on what they've done with these kind of male subjects. And this seems to me like one of those glaring cases of inequality in the health system, whereby it's almost dismissing the needs of women because we still live in a male-dominated culture. And, you know, I think that this is just something that needs to be far better known and far better understood. And, you know, what you said there about things improving, that is really, really good to see that kind of thing happening. But I think there's still a long way to go with this. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, you don't have to be even a specialist in menopause to see that the BBC News put out about 3 weeks ago that they've finally done a female anatomy doll.
Yeah.
It's never been considered before, and yet we talk about equality in life in general and equity, and you're kind of thinking, how have you ever managed to look after us? You know, in fact, I was going to have a look at if you were specialising, so if you were a medical student and you were specialising in gynae and obs, what that curriculum looked like for you.
Yeah.
So I was going to have a look at, because I've got to be honest, I was really, really lucky, like, to the audience I went to, sadly, a retired obs gynae, and he was phenomenal. He said, don't treat blood tests, I treat symptoms. We're going to try this, have a go at that now. Just to let the audience know that I've got something that maybe a woman might have, but she doesn't know because everybody tells you your estrogen is dropping. I've got estrogen dominance, so I've got too much estrogen. So when I started taking estrogen, I felt way worse to a point where my estrogen was shut down.
Yeah.
And I felt way better without it, which sounds really odd.
But that's tough, though. If you're experiencing symptoms and sometimes acute symptoms, those 3 months of investigation, and they're hard, aren't they, to persevere with that? I think that's another big issue.
Every girl, we all know, ladies, to be honest, is, you know, you get the pill when you're younger and they go, right, it's going to take at least 12 weeks to kick in. So you just have to have the same kind of level of patience, really, and understand which one's working for which symptom. So a lot of people really do get a lot of disturbed sleep, but that can be progesterone, because progesterone is the, I call it the Dylan from Magic Roundabout of drug, because it's made from yams, but it's the chill out hormone. And if you were looking at an actual period cycle all the way up to kind of being due on, your estrogen is really, really, really high. It's high, you get your period, and then that drops dramatically and progesterone kicks in. And I think what happens is that's why women are still perimenopausal, but the periods go a bit all over the place. If that estrogen that's usually high is dropped. So women will kind of find that sometimes as well that they maybe not have a bleed for about 8 months and then suddenly have a bleed. But there's one thing I want to really stress today, though, Tim, that's coming out more so in the research in this past couple of weeks, is that it isn't just about treating the here and now. What medically has been found, especially in the brain and in the body, and by physiotherapists and neuroscientists, is that early taking HRT early will save your body and your brain later on, and it actually saves you heart disease.
So that's an important message too. Do you know, do we have any data on the impact of the birth control pill on the menopause later on? And do we have any data about or any experience of whether heavy periods and irregular periods in your youth, are they an early sign of menopause, or are they a predictor of how the menopause might pan out for you later? I know, again, there's lots of variants there.
If only we did have loads of research.
Yeah.
Probably we'd have more in the young space, but I don't think your cycle and its heaviness, etc., can denote how you will be when you're older. Because I was really lucky. I was one of these girls who had a classic period. I didn't have any symptoms, and boy, have I paid in the last 6 years, because I spent all my youth kind of just going, oh, I've got my period, and I had no symptoms, no bloating, no headaches. And all of a sudden I got this. So it like I say, it's so unique. It's like getting pregnant and trying to compare pregnancies. And that's how women really need to understand that, because that woman is doing that doesn't mean it's right for you. But having that toolkit at home, you can kind of go, right, I'm going to try estrogen. I'm definitely going to try progesterone, because you are losing them. And I am going to try testosterone now. One of the ladies I spoke to in my WhatsApp group, I said to her, only I experimented. I was putting this testosterone gel on my legs every day. And I was like really angry. It just, so you know, you've changed. I'm not feeling as great as it is. So then I went every other day. And because I went every other day, it's like you can feel, because the testosterone, women always get a bit scared, I'm going to get a beard and start getting really muscly and all that kind of stuff. But it doesn't. It actually triggers not only your libido, but your metabolism, which every woman would be really happy about. And it triggers all that body composition stuff. So you do drop the water and you feel like yourself again.
Do you know, I read as well about women actually trading different hormones as well, because they were hard to access, maybe because of COVID and the lockdown. Is it true that some women are having to go to extraordinary lengths to try and access hormones? That again might be related to the COVID issues in terms of supply, but is that something that you've heard of?
Yeah, I mean, some women I know met in a park out of my group, because she wasn't, the doctor prescribed her 50 bottles of testosterone. Well, she didn't need it. So she actually handed that out because she didn't need it. She didn't understand why she got so much normally. To be honest, I don't know how she managed to get that prescribed, because you're only allowed 3 months at the moment. But yeah, I mean, I think it's, in some respects, it's a good thing socially that we're in a shortage, because that means women are getting to the doctors, reaching out, saying, you need to help me. The bad thing is, it doesn't seem to be important enough to get the manufacturing happening.
Right. So what we're saying is, people need to know about this stuff, and then they need to go to the doctors and know what kind of things to say to get help. Now,
sorry to interrupt, though. Say to Liz, there's a really good free app called Balance that is by Dr. Louise Newson. They can download that and they can go through, they create their own profile and they talk about the symptoms that they are experiencing. So I added ones that weren't on there because it's unique to me. And then what you can do is kind of keep a track of what you're feeling, when you're feeling it, in a very simple way. And my recommendation is you keep a track of that and then use that to go to your GP and say, these are the symptoms.
That's brilliant. I was about to say, obviously, with the internet, social media, young people, they might be able to use these things with their menopause moving into the future and these monitoring, which is really, really helpful. And I think that that's also very, very important. Now, you've mentioned that app and you've mentioned about knowing yourself, joining WhatsApp groups like your own, getting HRT. Are there any other things that women can do? Is there the particular lifestyle things that can help?
Yeah.
Or is it very subjective?
There's a really good book as well by Louise Newson, and it's a Haynes manual. Do you remember Haynes manuals?
Yeah.
So instead of it being like a Ford Fiesta Mark One, it's called Menopause. It's about a tenner off Amazon. That is absolutely brilliant. It actually explains to you what is happening inside your body. In that, it does talk about lifestyle changes. And I know women don't want to hear this when it says, you know, you maybe need to eat better because your hormones are telling you to eat chocolate and not go out the house. And this is kind of saying, but actually you might need to eat a lot more fibrous food, get a better diet and actually exercise. I think the challenge, Tim, is because I've been there, the girl who can deadlift 120 kg suddenly doesn't even want to look going to the gym, that motivation. So it's very difficult when you're being told this is what you must do. So we have to put that caveat in, is we get it, ladies. But with a bit of testosterone, you're kind of like, right. So I kind of omitted myself from physical activity. And then all of a sudden, my daughter was laughing when I started testosterone because I was getting up, and I do get up early in the morning and go swimming. And then she went open water swimming, and I went swimming with her. And she was like, wow, Mum, what's going on? Have I got my mum back? And I went, yeah.
Good. So, I mean, it's funny, isn't it, how these little changes can completely change the way you view things and the way you're able to do things. Do you know if you notice a change in your periods? I mean, you mentioned onset. It can be variable for different people, and 29 upwards, I think you might have mentioned, as an average. But if you do notice a change in your periods, I mean, people can change all the time for various reasons, but is that also a mark that things might be happening in terms of the menopause?
Yeah, and looking at age, it's really an age thing as well. For, like I said, mine are exactly the same. So despite all of those peripheral symptoms going on in my body, my periods are absolutely exactly the same. Whereas some missing periods. So it can be a trigger, but it's more looking at the symptoms that you're suffering. The sudden, like that, but women will talk about brain fog, etc., or walking and not remembering anything. And I think the thing is, it's one of the things I would say to women is it all sounds really terrible, but don't be medically gaslit. Don't say you've got to get on with it. But with the right treatment and the right HRT, I suppose, and the right approach of, you know, I might not want to go to the gym, or I might not want to do dancing anymore, whatever it is that floats your boat, just put yoga on with Adrienne on YouTube, and lie on the mat and do a bit of stretching. Because you've got to, one of the things I try and empower my ladies to do is do what you can for you to make you feel better. With the HRT, you'll be back to being you again. And it doesn't last forever.
Yeah. No, I think what you said, though, it's very much about the lived experience, isn't it? I mean, blood tests, oh, yeah, I don't treat the blood test. I treat the symptoms. And it's how we experience things, which is the big thing. And by knowing yourself and saying, right, what's good for me, et cetera, what's working for me? Right, I know I need to try this for 3 months before I make any decisions. You know, that's very, very important. And I think that's possibly what makes the menopause a difficult issue, is that there's no clear, like, black and white about it. And that lived experience is important. Do you know, when people are going through the menopause, can there be an impact? We've talked about mental health and physical health, but there must be an impact on relationships and on the workplace. And I know that you're a bit of a workplace expert on these issues. Now, in my school, we've just introduced a menopause warrior course for members of staff to talk about that issue. And my school's very forward thinking. We've got like counsellors and things like that for the pupils and the staff, and, you know, wellbeing weeks coming up, we're doing a wellbeing week, etc. But what can workplaces do, and what can partners do to help people going through the menopause, and what can people who are going through the menopause say to people to help them, you know, get by, as it were?
The only way I'm going to kind of describe this from a kind of almost helicopter view is that I read a post about men treating why men experience mental health and what they don't do about it. And I was reading it and thinking that totally aligns to how women are when it comes to menopause. It's men for mental health, women for menopause. Oh, because we've been so taught to just get on with it, medical gaslighting. You just do it, and I don't know if it's really menopause. So what you can do is A, track your symptoms. B, we all need to break the taboo, ladies, all of us. And then in work, what I did where I used to work at the co-op is I wrote a manager's guide, and it really is a very human-centric guide. And that guide is open. It's open source, which means anybody can download it. And it allows you to sit there and have an open conversation and dialogue about what are the reasonable adjustments I need. And that doesn't mean a desk on a fan. That is almost gaslighting in itself. It's about, what if I can't sleep at night? Do I need to start later? What if I need a nap at lunchtime? You know, even if you're a teacher, you're just so exhausted, you need to go away and have a ladies need to understand what they need while they're trying to get the right treatment. And workplaces need to be understanding on that. Workplaces need to acknowledge that they have women of that age and support them as you would any other.
So people can say this to the partners, say, right, here's what I'm going through. Let's have these conversations. People can talk to the workplace. Now, some workplaces and some careers might be quite unionized, et cetera. And I listened to a great podcast. I don't know if you listened to that 90 Minutes with Neville South or Menopause podcast. And I've heard a few podcasts about the menopause recently, which is great. And it is important that people do have those discussions. And if they've got a union that they're a member of, to go through the union and say, can I have some advice on approaching my workplace as well? In terms of relationships, we know that, like, in relationships, it can be very hard to have discussions, find time properly to discuss things, etc. But we do really do need to get this out in the open. And if someone knows, oh yeah, this person's not feeling great today, the mood's not good or whatever, that helps people to deal with things. It helps you who's going through the menopause and also people who you're mixing with to manage things. And is it important to get that message out there as well?
I think the biggest thing is loss of libido.
Yeah.
So where somebody might have had a really healthy sexual relationship, if that person is almost, imagine somebody feeling quite numb and not themselves, you know, where they might have had an amazing libido, or a normal, just a normal libido, it's suddenly, again, testosterone, we had four lots of it, you know, and then it's declining. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, the man might feel rejected, and this is why a lot of relationships split up, and the woman, to be honest, in some respects, if she's a bit numb, probably doesn't care. Yeah, so it's not that they don't care, it's that they are not themselves a lot of the time. They are themselves, but they're just... It's very odd. It's like you kind of don't feel like yourself anymore. It's very, very difficult to explain. And you don't really understand that until maybe you start getting treated and you look back retrospectively and go, who was that? Mm. So it is. So that's why, you know, to partners, I would say, recognize that, have a conversation. You might need to point it out to that person and say, I think you might need to get some treatment. You know, have a look what you can do from a sexual perspective. Ladies get dry downstairs because of the reasons I said before. So there could be lubrications that there are. It needs to be that they're supporting each other and being patient and understanding, and not necessarily, you know, from a male and sexual perspective, it's not all about them.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a very important point to finish on, really. Is there anything else that you want to add that we haven't covered? Because I think we've covered all the key issues I wanted
It's about women being brave now. And it's silly, and I hope when my daughter who's 15 is older, you don't have to be brave, but track your symptoms, understand who you are, think about the things you're thinking. And if you're feeling anxious and depressed and the doctors put you on antidepressants, say, I want to come off them, and I want to try an HRT, or I want to phase myself off them, I want to try HRT, especially if you're in that key age of over 41.
Brilliant. Thanks for that. What an important message, and I just can't believe that there has, well, it's took this long, but we need to get this out there. People need to understand. You're going to be waiting a long time for the medical establishment, the systems to change. So as Karianne's just said, you know, be brave, find out about yourself and move forward. So thank you very much, Karianne, for those important messages. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Just so you know, I'm now on Spotify and YouTube through Hope Street, but also North and South Podcasts as well. So if you can like and subscribe on YouTube to North and South Podcasts and on Spotify, share it with other people. If you can, contribute financially through coffee.com to keep these messages getting out there. And also follow me on Twitter at North Podcast. Karianne, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
That was brilliant. As I said, like, when I first heard you speak, I thought, I can't believe this, like, how slow this is. But just typical, really, isn't it, with that kind of, if it's not black and white and if it affects...
If it's not male...
Yeah, well, let's be honest, like, you say a minority, but it's like 51% of people, isn't it? It's ridiculous. Cool. Right.
I'm so excited that you're so passionate about it. That's what I love the night I was guest speaking is. I don't think I've ever had a man so passionate about something, because I also read a statistic last night that in, you know, that book, Invisible Women.
Yeah.
There's a book called Invisible Women. I would recommend you read it. There's a paragraph in there that says that women generally read books about men and how they behave, but men never read books about how women how they behave. And it's just such a, although this is about menopause, it is such a patriarchy that, you know, women ask me all the time, why do we not have research? Yeah. Why are we suffering from this? And the answer is pure and simple, because we're women.
Absolutely.
There's no other reason. I never say because we're women, and they go, but why? You know, we can get treated. I said, but don't forget, a lot of the things, so say from a sexual perspective, you can now get whatever it's called off over the counter.
Yeah.
Men can get, what's it called? I forgot the tablet.
Viagra.
Viagra. It was all over. And do you suffer from erectile dysfunction? And I know in Australia, when I lived there, it would be on the bloody radio at 9 o'clock in the morning. Would we see the same? I'd love to be able to listen to an advert saying, ladies, you know, not feeling sexy, want to have intercourse, want to be whatever. And it just be normalized. Imagine, because, and saying the same thing, get yourself some tester gel. But you Google it now and just say, helping men with their sex drive.
Yeah, that really is quite stark, isn't it? And I know that, like, you get this kind of reaction now, don't you? This kind of, oh, you're woke. This is woke social justice warrior nonsense. And you're like, wait there, look at the facts. I know, like, it's post-facts now and all this fake news nonsense, which people often throw around.
Well, a woman write about Twitter, on Twitter. No, it was the Lord who talked about, excuse me, making Westminster menopause friendly.
Yeah.
And I had to take myself away from the chat, because you had women going, we all got through it okay. Oh. There's all these women whining, and, you know, they need to, they were basically kind of gaslighting, going on. And that's the challenge with women is, well, you know, it's just normal. And it is just a normal thing, I think. But we've just not been educated on it. That's all. We're just not educated on it. And with the right treatment, just like your thyroid, I keep referring back to the right treatment, should be all right. But imagine having an unactive thyroid for 6 years without any treatment.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the speaker, John Bercow, saying that when he became speaker, the House of Commons had like a gun shooting, whatever you call it, place where you go and shoot guns, but they never had a crash. And quite recently, there was, I think it was a Labour MP, breastfeeding, and Jacob Rees-Mogg was like kicking off saying, oh, do we really want to see that in the House of Commons? Now, I might be wrong about whether it was him and whether he quite said it like that, but it was like quite a bit of uproar amongst many that this thing was now happening in plain sight. And it's like, it's natural, you know, it's ridiculous.
She went to private school, so she got a scholarship in a private school last year. And, you know, all of them will be going to Oxbridge and all that kind of stuff. But you could see it there that the girls got told off and the boys got away with everything. And they're almost presented in that way of, you know, let's... And then it's funny, actually, because I was watching Inside the Freemasons last night, a Sky documentary, the white middle-aged privilege. There wasn't any kind of... And you just think to yourself, you were sitting there and you're going... Yeah, and that's why we are the way we are.
Yeah. It's true, isn't it? I don't know. I just feel like the some of the political stuff now, like, oh, you can't be moaning about this. And it's just that, look at the facts, look at the evidence. You know, it's not even controversial, is it?
No, and I mean, this is why, you know, when I did the talk at Hope Street, and is it Sharon? There's a lady... Yeah, Sheila. I absolutely 100% believe that was pre-menopause.
Yeah.
I don't think, if she had nothing going on beforehand and then suddenly turned, that is her having no estrogen, no testosterone and no progesterone.
But then you go to the doctors and they're saying, oh, we are, is antidepressants or is this? And it's not even addressing the issue. Like severe impact.
Severe, massive. Yeah. And don't need it. And then because you internalize it, you think you've got a mental illness, you all of a sudden kind of own that mental illness. You know what anxiety is like? Yeah. People start owning it. As I said, yeah. It becomes part of you when really you want to say, actually, no, it's not me. So I'm going to go, lovely, because I'm going out at 12. I'm going down to Cheshire Oaks.
Absolutely fine. Enjoy, buy some nice stuff. And thank you so much for your time. I'll do a few notes and send you the notes, and you can say, I'll mention this and that as well. And I'll send it to you once I've edited it. Thanks very much, Carrie-Anne. That was brilliant.
See you later. Have a good day. See you. Bye. Bye.
Bye. Bye.